Welcome to I Totally Pause, the podcast where we are deep diving into the most iconic music movies of the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm Siobhan.
I'm Jess.
And we are back after a very, very long break. And it's my fault.
Hiatus. It's no one's fault.
It's truly no one's fault. What happened was I got headbutted by my nephew accidentally. He's not a jerk. He was giving me a hug. And he was a little excited.
He's just a little guy.
He's just a little guy. He's four, but in our family and his father's side, they have huge heads. So I didn't stand a chance against him. And I've had a concussion before, and hence I got a concussion. And so it was a really bad one. And for about 2 months, I've had a headache now, but I'm finally feeling better enough where I can be on a podcast again. Yeah.
Watch movies, look at screens. Woohoo!
Woohoo! I can look at screens and watch movies, and I can look at so many screens at once. So we are back.
And so we're back with our second music movie, right? We've only done the one so far. We did Empire Records.
Yes, and this is our second one. And honestly, I love this movie. I was watching I was like, good choice.
Yeah.
Good
choice. I think I actually saw this in theaters twice, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I was obsessed with the soundtrack.
We're talking about Dreamgirls.
Yes, the 2006 movie that was written and directed by Bill Condon.
This movie is freaking star-studded. Oh yeah. My gosh. And like, beyond the top bill, like as I was watching it, there were like just more and more cameos that I think like would not have been on my radar at the time.
Wait, speaking of stars, we have to talk about our guest.
Oh, yeah.
We have a guest today on our podcast.
Hey, y'all. What's happening?
It's Matt Schell. He's Matt back, everybody. Our viral sensation friend is back with us. And I thought he was the perfect person to pick for Dreamgirls because I don't know if you remember, Matthew, but Dreamgirls came out while we were doing I Hate Hamlet, which Jessica directed.
Mm. Yes, I do.
You and I starred in. You were the star, actually. I was just, you know. And you would drive me home from rehearsal.
That was a fun play.
And we would listen to the Dreamgirls soundtrack.
I kept trying to think, like, because I knew I hadn't seen it. I knew I hadn't seen it, but I knew it from something like from 1989? 81.
81 to 85, it ran on Broadway.
I remember hearing them songs, you know, Jennifer Holliday, everybody. But I knew it was somebody that I was going through the story with. I knew it was somebody going through the story, and I couldn't remember if we had watched it together. But then
no, we would just listen to the soundtrack. Burned you a copy so you could have a copy in your Cadillac car. We would drive home from rehearsal.
Uh
oh. In the town car, yo. Yes.
Yeah. Well, with all this talking about cars, you know who'd be really good if like you got into a car accident? Curtis, because he owned a used car a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into it. Are we ready?
Okay. Because I got questions. I got questions.
I got a lot to say. So I feel like we have to say first that this is based on the Broadway musical, which ran on Broadway from December of 1981 to August of 1985. I was born in 1984. So looking at those dates made me happy. I was like, oh, so this was like, you know, what a hit on Broadway looked like when I was born.
Yeah, cool. Us too. Yeah.
It starred the great Jennifer Holliday as Effie White, Jennifer Hudson's role. We can talk about it more later, but I wrote in my notes, it's the first note on my notes, her and I am telling you is the only one, and I will fight you on this.
Okay, we'll get back to that.
We'll get there. But this movie is friggin' star-studded. Let's talk about it. Jennifer Hudson, Jamie Foxx, Anika Nani Rose, who I do not think was on my radar at the time because I was very excited watching it today to see her. She's Anika Nani Rose was
Laurel.
What's her name? Laurel.
Tiana.
She's Princess Tiana.
Yes, that's what I meant.
And she's like a Broadway person too, but
because she was already doing Broadway back then, so yeah. I knew of her name because that's when I was living in New York. So I definitely had heard her name before.
Yeah, she's Princess Tiana, and more recently she was in that movie Jingle Jangle on Netflix.
I did not.
The new Christmas movie.
Yeah, we started that one. The kids finished it without me.
Oh, it's good. You should watch it. It was a really good one. Eddie Murphy, who is fantastic in this
amazing.
Movie.
Yo, Eddie
Robbed. Murphy. Robbed of we'll an Oscar.
There was like a moment that took my breath away. We'll talk about it when we get to it.
Okay.
Eddie Murphy, who is incredible. Danny Glover and the great Beyonce.
Beyonce auditioned in full costume and performed with choreography.
God bless.
Wow. And you know she hired because she can afford that, to hire a choreographer to give her own special choreography for an audition.
Right, for her audition.
Yep, she deserved it. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that one of her life goals is to win an Oscar for acting. I don't know if she's that good, but she was better than Jennifer Hudson, I thought. She was pretty good in this.
Bad.
I think I used to think that. I used to think that Beyonce was better than Jennifer Hudson. I wasn't sure who should have been what character. But when I watched it today, I was like, no, that was perfect.
It had to be the way it was. Beyonce is the more traditionally beautiful of the two. We're looking at that, particularly that particular plot line. I don't think you could have cast them the other way, but just as far as that aside, looking at who's a better actor, I think Beyonce emotes more effectively than Jennifer Hudson does.
I think what ended up happening is that the style ended up being perfect for the way Jennifer Hudson acts.
Oh, I disagree.
I think she ended up fitting the style really well. I wasn't put off.
I think I could have cared about Effie a lot more with a better actress.
Well, so that's what I have moments where I want to ask you to your opinions as performers, being like, is Effie justified or being an asshole? And it comes up a few moments.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I have a lot of thoughts, but I think I could have had more compassion for Effie with an actress who sold me on her emotions more.
They kind of make, I felt like the first half of the movie, you're almost on everybody else's side being like, Effie's ungrateful. And
I have specific thoughts when we get to the specific moments. Jennifer Hudson beat out hundreds of girls who auditioned for the role of Effie White, including Fantasia Barrino, who I know you like.
I do, but I don't think Fantasia can do enough different things with her voice to pull off Effie White.
That's fair. I've never seen Fantasia act. I just have a feeling she's better at it than Jennifer Hudson.
As far as I know, Fantasia's only acted in her biopic that was on Lifetime. That was based on her book.
No. Fantasia can sing. She can sing soul and gospel like no other. There's a really cool video on YouTube with her singing with her mom, and it's dope.
Didn't she sing at Aretha Franklin's funeral? I feel like she did something that was amazing at Aretha Franklin's.
I don't doubt it. She's one of those people that when she sings, and I think even more over than Beyonce, I think Fantasia, I think Jennifer Hudson, and there's plenty of others out there. When they sing, you can feel. Mm-hmm. Oh God, you can feel all of it. Every bit of pain. When Mary J. Blige isn't overproduced, it's the same effect. You hear every thing that it took to get to recording that song. Mm-hmm. Now, Beyonce can certainly move you with
her. Beyonce is technically perfect.
There you go.
But that's not the same.
Right things the right way. And I don't think she's lost the craft or anything, but it's just, chocolate vanilla, French vanilla.
We also see Dina's character because as I remember at the time, Beyonce doing an interview saying in the beginning, I held back my voice because I'm supposed to be worse than Effie. Mm-hmm. So I held back and tried to emulate what they wanted. But then you see her in that second act as she's going out.
Where she finds her voice.
She literally finds her voice and sings Listen, which just sounds amazing.
Yeah. I also read, guess who else auditioned for Effie White? You guys ready?
Who?
Retta.
Yes, I read
that.
I
didn't think about that. I don't know if she can sing.
She's got a great voice.
Does she?
Great.
Because she can act. Holy hell. Did you guys ever watch Good Girls?
I'd love to see that.
Did you guys watch Good Girls? Good Girls is like an okay show. But Retta is fantastic on it. And I only knew her from Parks and Rec, where she's funny, but she's got she's funny in Good Girls too, but she got to have a lot more meat on the bone in Good Girls. And she's fantastic. I think she could have been excellent.
Look up some of her stand-up.
I will, she sings?
She sang in her stand-up, yeah. And it's this really cool part where she pulls up and she's saying how she's being judged because all you hear is all this bass coming through her car. She starts going through it. Okay. And then she minds rolling down her window and then she's listening to this opera and she starts singing it. And it's really
cool.
person in the car is like, bitch.
Yeah. She's great. She's like crazy smart too. Like, I think she went to Duke.
Oh, she's like one of those
Usually all the funny people are smart. Like
wild smart.
Okay, so Jennifer Holliday can do a lot of different things, or she does a lot of different
Jennifer
things.
Jennifer Hudson?
With her voice. No, Jennifer Holliday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
When she sings,
her voice is still amazing too.
It is. And she just does all the choices she makes in her voice. That it'll go from that, it'll go from real raspy to like real deep.
And
But makes it all work in the same sort of like wave, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not, you don't look at it and be like, wow, she's doing the most. You're like, you're not coming off with that. You're like, she's just doing it.
she makes so many different choices in how she wants to sound for this note and how she wants to sound for that note. That I think Jennifer Hudson followed that or played with that the same way.
A little bit, yeah. Not to the
same. Jennifer Holliday, also, fun fact. Also, for anyone listening, if you don't know what we're talking about, I feel like you maybe have to follow theater to know Jennifer Holliday. Yeah.
Well, she was the originator of Effie.
Yeah, she's the original Effie White. And if you're not familiar, she did And I Am Telling You at the Tony Awards in 1981.
Yes.
She was 21 years old.
She's 21.
She was a baby when she sang that song.
I just watched that today.
I have no words to do it justice. You just have to see it.
You gotta.
It's earth shattering. It's incredible.
I just watched it. I'd seen it before and I watched it again today.
A child.
Holy snap.
And wow.
Snaps to Jennifer Holliday. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did you guys watch the video of her and Jennifer Hudson singing together?
No.
It was 10 years ago.
Clip of it one time. I haven't seen the whole thing. I think I haven't seen the whole thing.
It's good. It's good. It's worth watching. But you get to see the difference. It's good to watch because you can see the difference in their voices and their choices. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Hudson starts singing Jennifer Holliday's part because she starts singing that like from the mountain, ask her, and then she stops and she does like her real verse. And then when Jennifer Holliday starts, she starts with that part. It's like, you jumped up on Jennifer Holliday's lyric.
I'll have to watch that.
You can do that. See, now Jessica wants to watch that.
I do. I also read that Jamie Foxx originally turned down the movie because they didn't offer him enough money.
Yeah.
He came back and decided to do it after like Beyonce was attached to it. But in the meantime, they offered his role to Denzel Washington, who turned it down because he can't sing. And God bless. Yep. I wish only that Russell Crowe would have had the same wisdom when he got the offer for Les Mis.
And apparently, and this was probably like, because this
heard bad things, yeah.
the real it's champion. It's another one,
perfect movie musical. I loved it so much. But Russell Crowe, I mean, we can do a whole other episode about this. But Russell Crowe sings Stars, which is one of my favorite songs in Les Mis. And it just falls so flat. It's not good. It's
supposed to sound pretty or whatever, is not supposed to yada yada, but
I think
those are the apologists kind of talking.
Yeah. No, listen to the Broadway cast recording. You can hear what it can sound like.
Gotcha. Yeah. Ever seen?
Never seen Les Mis?
I haven't. Not the
ever old. Anywhere?
In any media.
No, it's worth watching the movie if you're not familiar with it at all. Mm-hmm. It's got our man Hugh Jackman.
There's a resistance.
That was my very first outing, the very first time I like left my house and did something without Judah after he was born. Siobhan and I went to see Les Mis
because it has our boy Hugh Jackman in it.
Yep, it was important.
He's such a guy.
Yeah.
I would also like to say for Dreamgirls that David Geffen randomly was a big champion of making this movie. He literally had been trying to make this movie for decades. Or like Will Smith was attached to it. Whitney Houston was attached to it at one point as Dina. Terrence Howard, like a lot of different people went through.
I would have liked to have seen Terrence Howard in this movie. I read that at least one, I don't remember exactly who it was, but at least one of the original Broadway cast members was offered the opportunity to audition for it and they declined because they didn't like some of the changes they made. Now, I've never seen Dreamgirls on stage. So yeah. I know they added a handful of songs, but I do know that Jimmy Early does not die in the stage version.
Really?
Yeah.
I know the one thing they changed it from was changing the setting from Chicago to Detroit And Detroit is also where the Supremes are from.
Oh, okay. So I didn't even know that. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
It doesn't get done. Like, you don't really see it.
And I don't think, and I don't think some of our younger audience members would realize that Dreamgirls is known to be based off of the Supremes.
Right.
And so Dina is kind of supposed to be Diana Ross. And there's a lot of like comparisons to, which I guess we can get to as I like, we see them. I have a whole thing where there's all these comparisons between the Dreams and
the Supremes.
Yeah.
It was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, but not Best Picture.
It's actually one of the ones that has the most nominations without
being nominated
for Best Picture, which
Best Picture.
Is a shame.
That year, 3/4 of the nominees for Best Original Song were from Dreamgirls.
Wow.
And I believe Listen won, right?
I believe so. It was
Beyonce performed it at the Academy Awards.
It was Listen, I Love You, I Do, and Patience, I think were the three.
Yeah. But Beyonce was not a co-writer on it, so she did not get an Oscar. Is that correct?
Correct.
What was I going to say? It's the only time, obviously the only time Jennifer Hudson's been nominated for an Academy Award, and also the only time Eddie Murphy has ever been nominated for an Academy Award.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Jennifer Hudson didn't get nominated for Sex and the City?
Can you believe it?
I remember actually there was some drama because Eddie Murphy, who had been winning awards, they won the Golden Globe. They won, and the movie won Best Musical at the Golden Globes that year too. Jennifer Hudson won, but Eddie Murphy had been winning all the awards and sweeping, and it was kind of an upset that he didn't win.
He didn't win the Oscar. He should have.
But he walked out of the auditorium after he didn't win.
Did he really?
Yeah, he didn't stay for the show.
That's a sin. I don't blame him. That must be disappointing.
No, that's like looked down upon. That's like,
I understand that it's looked down upon, but he's only human. Like, how many times is Eddie Murphy going to be nominated for an Oscar? And he was great in that movie. I'm sure that was disappointing.
Yeah, he deserved to win. Oh, I agree. It was a complete rob.
What was he competing against that year?
Oh yeah, who won?
Hold on one second. Let me find out. Because I looked up who Jennifer Hudson was up against.
Jennifer Hudson having an Academy Award makes me feel like I could have an Academy Award.
You know what's crazy? I thought that in like a really good way.
She was actually better in this movie than I remembered her to be.
She
No, it fell as flat for me as I remembered.
It was better than I remembered. Well, even though I hadn't seen it. But she was better than I remembered. It was something about like she was a contest winner. She came off the contest and was living this sort of dream girls like.
Did she win American Idol?
No.
I don't think she got
kicked off in the middle.
Yeah. She was even one of those like upsets where like people thought she could win. And who did she lose to?
Was that, yeah.
Wasn't it her and Clay, was it her with Clay Aiken and Ruben Studdard?
Oh, that was that year when like, it was a couple greats came out of that year.
Yeah.
She was on the Fantasia Barrino year, I believe. Ah, yeah. Okay.
30.
So Eddie Murphy was up against Mark Wahlberg.
Go ahead, sorry.
What I'm saying, Jessica, please?
Sorry, go ahead.
Eddie Murphy was up against Mark Wahlberg in The Departed. I'm going to say his name wrong. Demon Hansu in Blood Diamond. Jackie Earle Haley in Little Children. And Alan Arkin in Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Who do you think won?
You ain't going to beat Alan Arkin. I mean...
He won, yes. Alan Arkin was the winner.
Yeah, and...
Most notable, but see, Eddie Murphy actually did have some stuff because Jackie Earle Haley was a child actor who had done nothing for decades and got into Little Children and was like a comeback story. So people love that. And then Alan Arkin is older and like, you know, has been, but so has Eddie Murphy had been around in Hollywood for decades.
Yeah, but he was all comedies.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. Like how many chances is he really going to have with his career to win an Oscar? Jennifer Hudson came in 7th. In season 3 of American Idol, and that was the season when Fantasia Barrino won.
That's what I thought.
Wasn't a couple people come out that lineup?
Diana DeGarmo, who still does a lot of Broadway, and she's married to Ace Young, who was like my big crush that season.
They got married?
Mm-hmm. They got engaged on a season finale of American Idol with a sponsored ring. It was really tacky.
Ew,
like when he proposed, he was like, this ring from
Ace Young would totally do that with a sponsored ring.
It was tacky, but he was hot. I loved him. When he did Father Figure, ooh, loved him.
Oh, yeah.
I will be your father figure.
As long with the dreams being kind of like stand-ins for the Supremes, Curtis is known to be like a stand-in for Berry Gordy, who ran Motown. And really...
At first you're wondering, like, is this on purpose? But then it hits a point where it's just, it's out loud.
Oh, yeah. It's there's so much, it's so many things. Like, because they basically, it's Berry Gordy, he kind of is accused of payola, which is this, the act of basically paying off DJs to play.
Yeah, pay for play.
Which was a huge deal back in the 50s. Like, some DJs completely lost their careers after they got learned, like, they were doing it. Like, really popular ones. Like, imagine Ryan Seacrest, which I think does, like, top 40 and stuff. Imagine, like, he actually, like, was a DJ who really was like, hey, guys, my opinion matters. Yeah. Like, you know, and not just playing when I'm told to play. It's like Ryan Seacrest being accused of taking bribes.
Should we get into breaking this down? Because I have a lot of things I want to say, but I want to wait the right
time. Yeah, do you want to get into the movie?
Also, I was going to say, did y'all notice, were there any parallels between the Dreamgirls and the Supremes, but also like Destiny's Child?
I thought about that, but I wonder if I would have thought that if it wasn't Beyonce. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like, I don't know if I just had that in my head.
It was the three of them. It was
because Beyonce was always pushed as the main person. Beyonce, I feel like, was always the main person.
Yeah. I saw a fun fact. I used to tell my students this and they always like loved it. I saw Destiny's Child in like, I don't know, maybe 1999 open for Christina Aguilera. So I always used to like to tell my students that I saw Beyonce open for Christina Aguilera. And I randomly, like, those tickets were a birthday present from my parents. I had like floor, like in the first few rows, like seats for that.
Those were good tickets.
I was like very into, that was Christina, like genie in a bottle. I was like very into her.
Yeah. For Destiny's Child to be opening for her, yeah.
So like any good musical, it opens with a good beat, an audience cheering. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, so we're at like a talent show. Like it seems like we've learned from a lot of these movies, like we've talked about this before. They were always having talent shows like in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was happening a lot.
Yeah,
it was American Idol, the voice of that time. It was
all. Yeah, we see the wonders in that. A lot of this actually reminded me of That Thing You Do, another one of our favorite movies that we've discussed on the pod.
I didn't think about that.
You know, I like a movie where you see someone like realize their dreams of stardom.
Yeah.
So they're at this talent show, and we don't see the dreams yet, but it starts by introducing the indefatigable stepsisters. And I thought, what a great adjective to describe like a girl band. We are starting out real strong.
Identical. Icy blue glittery dresses, doing identical moves in unison.
Doing other moves, yeah.
Backed it up twice to try to figure out what he said there, but okay.
Indefatigable.
Indefatigable, okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for catching that, because I did not catch that either.
For real.
Yeah, I enjoy a good vocab word. That made me happy.
She's all about the wordplay.
I am all about the wordplay. Then we see the stepsisters, and we see that like they're very upset, and they are walking out, we hear, on the great Jimmy Early.
And Danny Glover is following them and he's begging them not to leave and saying that Jimmy didn't mean it, but they're not having it and they leave.
Yeah, we get the impression that Jimmy has been like inappropriate with them.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Jimmy has this reputation because Danny Glover then, like you get the impression he's his manager and he's trying to find new backup singers. Mm-hmm. And he actually goes to the girls that are first introduced in the movie and they're like—
Right, and they're like, no.
They're like, no, thank you.
And he's like, it's the great Jimmy Early. And they're like, mm-mm.
They like don't even give him a word.
Then we see Beyonce show up, and she is
very young looking Beyonce.
Very young Beyonce.
Very young looking. Very young looking. Makeup was fun. In the whole movie.
She's very late. She says that her mama doesn't like her being out this late, so she had to like wait.
Very young too.
And did you see who she was apologizing to?
Did you see who she was apologizing to?
It's Steve Urkel.
It was Jaleel White.
I didn't say that. Yeah, it was Jaleel White. Yeah, I was so happy. I love when he pops up somewhere.
And it's
long.
He wins Dancing with the Stars. Well.
I follow him on Instagram. He seems like he's like living his best life.
He made his fortune in how he's doing what he wants to do.
Didn't he win Dancing with the Stars?
Did he?
I know he was on it one of them times.
I think he got, if he didn't win, he got really, really far.
Mm-hmm. Just as a fan.
Good for him. I tried to make my kids watch Family Matters on Hulu recently because I thought they would think Steve Urkel was really funny, and it just like it didn't translate. They weren't into it.
Aww.
And that was of the era.
You should try Fresh Prince. Of the I feel like they like Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
Maybe. I just thought like specifically, I thought they would get a kick out of Steve Urkel, and they just like didn't.
What about Stefan? Did they see Stefan?
If we never got to Stefan or Kel.
They might have found it funny.
So Jamie Foxx shows up. We've seen him like lurking in the shadows before this. This is all like in the first like 2 minutes. A lot of things happen like really fast in this movie. Yeah. Jamie Foxx like speaks to Steve Urkel. and so Urkel finally agrees that they can go on last.
Yeah, he helps them get a like spot back into the show. And Jamie Foxx, I guess he's there scoping out talent.
Yeah, he's trying to find like a big act that he can like represent and like get from the ground up, I think.
Because he hadn't come there with anybody, right?
Seem to have an act.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't seem like it.
Because he's not, at first I thought he was already with Jimmy Early, but then we learned that he's not yet.
Right.
Right.
But I think he was scoping out acts. I think he had this dream to like start a record company early. And this was...
At this point, they're called the Dreamettes. And we see the three of them together for the first time. So it's Beyonce as Dina, Anika Nani Rose as Laurel, and Jennifer Hudson as Effie. And they're like standing in front of the mirror. They're getting ready.
Effie's the last to arrive and immediately asks why they don't have their own dressing room.
They're like literally like nobodies, and Effie shows up and is already like a diva.
Right, she already has it without being
bad. The dress does nothing for her body. She's not happy. Beyonce has them turn their wigs around for like a new look.
Mm-hmm. I like Laurel has a great line where she's like, "You got the same wig I got. You got the same dress I got. Then shut up."
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like we've all done shows, and I feel like we've all been with that person that just complains about everything in the show.
Or like when you're in a wedding.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one too.
And you've got to like wear the thing and do the stuff, and it's like just
suck it up and do it.
Just suck it up.
Like, come on, that's a great example.
So they go out and they perform, and they've kind of like, at this point, they've kind of met Jamie Foxx, Curtis, in passing. And Effie, like already, she's, as they're performing, she's making eyes at him. From the first time we see them together, she's like into him.
Well, Jamie Foxx, before she leaves, because she's complaining about everything, and he tells her he thinks she looks just great. And so she saunters out of the room with her hand on her
head. Yeah, so she's like feeling good.
So he shows his interest in her as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk more about that later. But he does. Yeah.
And the song they perform is Move.
Oh, you think he was setting bait?
Yeah, I think it was always Dina he wanted, but he knew he had to like keep Effie happy.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well,
very early in the movie, we see him like goo-goo eyed at Dina. Well, I have a note when it comes up.
Well, I think
he gets involved romantically with Effie because he knows that's what he has to do to keep her happy.
Wow. Okay, we'll get there.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
If I were directing Dreamgirls, I might suggest that.
Very interesting. No, that's why we have the different takes. All right. So, well, the girls do a great job, but they don't win.
No. Well, Jamie Foxx is one of the judges.
We're not going to be famous.
Yeah, cute. But we see so they're like, the audience is really into it. They do a good job. And Jamie Foxx goes outside before they announce the winner, Curtis, and he slips one of the judges $5. And he's like, yo, $5 if the Dreamettes don't win. If they won, they would get like a week-long contract at this.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah. They would get like a week-long show at like whatever this theater was. So he like doesn't want them to win because he wants to like scoop them up and represent them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's like, $5 if they don't win. And the judge is like, they weren't going to win anyway.
Like, put the cigarette out, put the $5 in his pocket.
Aw, it's poor girl.
That was so classy. I love that. And even like, everybody was a somebody. Everybody in that movie was a somebody. Who was that? I didn't take as good as notes as y'all did.
Was he from the Broadway show?
I forget. What was his name in the movie? Is that Ralph Lewis? Ralph Lewis Harris? He was a somebody. Everybody was a somebody in that movie.
So we learn really quickly, again, a couple of things. We meet Cece, who is Effie's brother.
And writes all of their songs.
And he writes all their songs, and it sounds like does their choreography.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's why he was teaching them the fellas the moves.
Yeah, like so in this moment, after they lose, Dina says like, you know, she's ready to like throw in the towel. She's like, you know, how long have we been doing this? And she says to him, like, how many dances do you have in your head for us? How many songs, like, have you written us? So I got the impression that he does their choreography, too. But then Curtis walks up, and he offers them a deal to sing with Jimmy Early.
He says, you don't need an amateur contest, because there's nothing amateur about you. You need a break.
Which is, I mean,
everybody, he's so smooth.
He was so cool. That was the other thing about Eddie Murphy too, is that he was like back to cool old Eddie Murphy.
He was so charming. When he can turn on the Jimmy Early charm, he was great. Which we'll get to in like 3 minutes.
Effie doesn't want to do it. She says that they don't sing backup, but they offer them $400 a week and a chance to go on tour.
I thought it was, there was a magic word he said to Effie. What did he say to her?
He calls her a stone cold fox.
Yeah.
I am so sad that when I was like young and hot, no one ever called me a stone cold fox. I feel like that's like an amazing turn of phrase. We need to bring that one back. I'm sorry if that's like anti-feminist, but I really enjoyed that.
That's not, like, obviously he's sweet talking them and stuff, but I think I'm going to be on the side where I think Curtis is attracted to Effie. But maybe, I don't know, my boyfriend, he recently told me I was, and I know he's dated like a bodybuilder, not bodybuilder, but like someone very fit. And he told me I was the second skinniest person he's ever been with because I was like complaining about my weight. And he was like, he likes womanly women. And so that's why.
It's not that I can't imagine him being attracted to a woman like Effie. It's just that very early on,
we see him looking at Dina
a certain way.
Okay. That's fair. And it's fair because he does. He does give Dina a look early on.
I think I missed that. You're making me want to watch it again and again and then come back to this, but no.
I made a note of it when it happened. I will let you know when we get to
it. He's into her, calls her Stone Cold Fox. So, okay, maybe that was all just part of the...
shtick.
Part of the shtick.
Right.
When he goes on and starts talking about how, you know, these kids watch TV. These kids watch...
Oh, yeah, that's later. He turns into such a dick.
He did, but I was thinking that, I think that made it seem like that even all along it was about the package. Was about the package. Because even when he was talking about Effie and them, he was like, no, Effie's the front because the kids these days want this. And we gotta get this music onto the pop charts. Once we get our music onto the pop charts, then it was on TV. And then once it was like TV, it was like, gotta scratch TV. And then he goes on to say, these kids are doing disco. He said, and so when they booty shaking and driving, it's gonna be to our music. So
yeah, he's a sellout. It's always about like chasing whatever the fat is.
Yeah, which is why eventually, not to jump ahead, but CeCe doesn't want to work with him and gets upset.
He was always selling out to like the product. I even like how he said, what you call it? His mom said, "Well, you talking
about his mom?"
Yeah, you talk about her like she's a product. He said, "Oh, I like that word."
I know. It's so creepy. And then he goes on to marry her, which like makes that creepier.
We'll get there. He's gross. I'm not a fan.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves, but he tells her,
"You do this. You sing behind Jimmy Early right now, and I'm gonna make you a star."
Now, by the way, let's remember Curtis does not have a relationship with Jimmy Early.
No,
right.
He's just talking out of his ass right now.
Yeah. See, and that's what I thought. I thought that was so, that's one of the things that made him seem so cool.
He made things happen. He's a guy that makes things happen out of thin air.
Like it was all confidence and swagger that did it, you know, and then that pimp charm, you know what I mean? And he scooped those young girls right up.
I mean, wouldn't you? Yeah. Like Jessica and I, what if I could sing and we had a little like, we were at a like talent show.
We had a little act.
You could sing behind Ace Young for her. What would you, we'd be like, yeah, hell yeah, we'll do that.
We would turn around like, oh my God.
Matt Shell, come on the road with us.
So then we see Jimmy Early, I think for the first time, right? And his manager, Marty, is telling him, we have these new girls, but like, you've got to lay off the women that you work with. You've got to stop talking. And Jimmy Early's basically like, nah.
It's like, Marty should know by now that that's a fruit.
He's like, you know, where else am I going to meet women?
Baby, you know me, baby. Nah, baby. Hey, listen, baby.
Yeah, and then Jimmy, when he finally meets the girls, he puts on the full charm. He gets up on his knees. He's like,
well, on the way up, he's telling them, like, Jimmy only works with two. But then when he sees the three girls, he's like, we can make three work.
He says
to Laurel, he gets down on one knee, and he says, exactly what would you like Jimmy to do for you, baby?
Yes!
And it gave me the same vibe as, like, Matt, have you watched Hamilton yet? So that we can continue our friendship, can you please get on with it?
I will give you my
Disney Plus login.
Okay.
Matt Shell, the number of times you must have been asked that.
Come on.
In general, not by Jessica, but just in general.
And I know I'll like it. I'll like it once I watch it.
Of course you will. And then you get someone telling you, gather safely in my home, you are going to come over and I'm going to make you Coddleston pie and we are going to watch Hamilton.
We will watch Hamilton.
And it's going to happen. But when Hamilton meets Angelica Schuyler for the first time, he says, "You strike me as a woman who has never been satisfied."
Whoa.
And the first time I heard that lyric, I remember I was washing dishes when I listened to Hamilton for the first time, and that one pulled me up short. I was like, ooh. And it was like kind of the same like vibe. And Jimmy was like, exactly what would you like Jimmy to do for you? And she's just so sweet. She's all like giggly. She's so like
sweet. Oh, she's totally taken by him. Laurel like already loves
him. She's only 18. We're gonna find out.
Not even 18. Not even. She just has her birthday. Like when they
Right. So she's still 17 here. She's like a little baby.
They're all little babies.
Mm-hmm. So they perform with him. It goes great.
Fake Your Way to the Top, which is a great song on the soundtrack.
And then we get a tour montage. They go on tour and we see everything kind of getting like kicked up a notch. We see them with like nicer wigs, nicer dresses. Everything's starting to get like a little fancier as they go through this tour with Jimmy Early. Yep.
Did you love the chaperone, Jessica, on the bus?
I did love it. That's my next note.
Harlem.
Did you get exactly what she said? Because I didn't get the whole quote.
Oh, she goes, so Jimmy, obviously, he and Laurel are, like, attracted to each other.
He's, like, got his sights set on Laurel.
Yeah, and Laurel is, like, up in the front, like, sleeping, and so Jimmy hangs out in the back of the bus. That's where Jimmy's, like, hangout is. So he notices she's
by cool kids.
He walks up, and the chaperone, what does she put, her leg out or her hand
out?
Yeah,
she, like, stops him short.
And she points to the back of the bus. She goes, "That's Harlem." And she goes to the front of the bus. "This is Hollywood. You ain't welcome in Hollywood." which I felt like had a double meaning for the time too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I thought it was interesting that she chose Hollywood and
Harlem and Hollywood.
Being like, stick to who you are and like your people. Like you're not welcome.
Right.
Where the fancy white people
stay in
are.
Your lane. That like seems like crisis averted. But then the chaperone falls asleep and we see Laurel sneak to the back of the bus to like hang out with Jimmy. And she starts off strong. We're like real proud of her at the beginning. He's like kind of like kissing her neck and she's like kind of into it. And then she goes, "You're married, aren't you?" And he goes, "Everyone knows Jimmy's married." Ugh. And she goes, "Then you get your married hands off."
Yes.
And she like, walks away.
She walks away. And then Jimmy goes, "So it's going to take 2 weeks."
Yes. As he lights a cigarette.
That's what he said. Yes. And then takes a swig out of his flask.
When then we see like Effie and Curtis are kind of like into each other and she asks him if he prefers little Tweety birds like Dina or if he prefers a real woman. And he tells her that he was raised by his sisters and they were all just as real as she is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like how she's fishing from info, but like she's like not afraid to ask like the question.
Yeah, she's bold. You have to give her credit for that. She's fear.
And then at the club, you see Curtis is kind of introducing Cece to Jimmy and trying to get Jimmy into like recording one of his songs. But Jimmy blows off Cece in like such a mean way.
Yeah, he's really rude. And this is where like at least I first started to understand that Jimmy is a star in like a very niche way.
Yes.
Because Cece says like, "We can get you played on the pop chart." Jimmy is not on like the top pop charts. He is famous, you know, the way my brother was famous, like in a very niche.
Yeah, your brother had in his niche, like his genre, he was like a star, but like in.
But not on the pop charts.
Yeah, which, you know, doesn't take anything any away from anyone. It's just like, you just need that break.
That's not where the money is. Yeah.
In the context of the times, they were saying that Early couldn't break into the mainstream. In other words, he wouldn't get on white radio. So they were like, "Look, you got the soul thing, you got the soul crowd, the black gospel R&B. Blues, you got them." But he's like, for us, for them to listen to our music, for us to be on those radios, mm-hmm. voice, you're not the sound that's gonna take us there.
Who do you think Jimmy Early is a composite of? Like, he's definitely like James Brown.
I was thinking James mm-hmm. Brown, body, but it took all the way up to the end when it was him and the two wives, or like, you know, the two women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The womanizing, the drug use, the moves. You know, that kind of came together, but I didn't know if it was anybody else before that. Like when he was doing all the, when he tried to get soft.
I mean, he does have like his Marvin Gaye moment.
I thought it was Marvin Gaye too. I thought it was Marvin Gaye around when he was like, "This is more that message music." And he pulls out his drugs and they're like, "You don't have to do that." And then Eddie Murphy, yo, he killed it with that look.
I want to talk about that when we get there.
Okay.
We all three of us, literally, I guarantee you, we're all talking about the same moment.
He should have won an Oscar for that moment, but we will get there.
We will get there. Oh. We will get there. So Curtis tells Jimmy and Marty about his dream, about where they can record their own music without any interference from, like, the man, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, they can do it their way, and nobody's going to steal their music. They'll own their music. Because that was a big thing. And they go into it because he talks about who's the first person that recorded Hound Dog. And they're like, Elvis Presley. He's like, no. He's like, Big Mama Thornton. She's the first person to record Hound Dog. And that was what a lot of people, like Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, they were influenced by Black artists and openly, like, for lack of a better word, openly stole from them.
And well, like, yeah, no, it's, I mean, that's exactly what happened. So, well, yeah, so what happens is that they kind of blow CeCe off, but then CeCe's at the piano and he starts playing Cadillac Car, mm-hmm. and they're like into it. So they
record it.
And we get a Climbing the Charts montage, which I always enjoy.
Yeah. And they make their own vinyl records for it too.
Yeah. They get their own record. Like, they're finally going to, like, you know, this is going to be like it for them. They hear it on the radio, which is like a great moment in these movies.
See, because Curtis says the universal truth where people love songs that make you feel good while you're driving your car.
Yeah.
And so they do Cadillac Car. Yes, I got me a Cadillac. Cadillac.
I'm a star. We see it climb the charts. It gets to number 38. And then we see this, like, white guy doing this, like, slowed down kind of, like, soulless
Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm. Very
right.
Yep.
Have you guys yet watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom?
No, I want to, though.
Holy shit.
What's it called? What does it say?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's based on an August Wilson play. I've never seen the play. Oh yeah. It's very like when Jared when Jared and I watched it, Jared was like, why are they monologuing so much? It's a play. I've never read or seen the play, but I imagine it's very true to it. Like it all, like it felt like a play.
And I believe it's Chadwick Boseman's last film.
Okay. Oh yeah.
He is friggin' incredible in it.
People are saying he might win an Oscar.
He should. He should. Oh my God. That movie, it shook me to my core. And I don't want to say why the scene made me think of it, because I don't want to spoil it for when
don't spoil
you
it.
Watch
Maybe
it.
I'll make Bob watch it tomorrow.
But just keep in mind, watch it soon and then text me so we can talk about this.
Okay.
But this, when we saw the white guy singing Cadillac Car, it made me think of the end of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And it was, I want to go back and read the play now, but it was freaking unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's why Little Richard was always so pissed off at the Grammys and awards and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He was saying when he was making his music, he didn't get credit for it.
Every
time he put out an album, it got stolen, it got whitewashed.
It's amazing how that could happen back then, because now you have like the Katy Perry lawsuit with the like dun 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 dun. That's what that lawsuit was about. Dun 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 dun. That's what all it was about.
Right. But you could steal a whole song and
lyrics nothing. And all, mm-hmm. the words, like, you know what I mean?
It's because it's like no one cared about Black artists, I assume. That was like point. I assume it wouldn't have happened the other way.
There was no laws for such things, and people didn't care, right? Like they had all the power, and you even see Curtis do it to his own people later on in the movie.
Right. So that's when they decide that they're going to start getting involved in like this payola scheme. They're going to start paying radio stations to play their music, and we see Curtis like gambling, like getting involved with the mafia, doing like, because they say to him like, you know, that's expensive, like we don't have the money for that.
Dumps out all these car keys. I thought that was awesome from a point of view. That was a really pimp like moment.
That's a great song too, is a step into the bad side. They're going
doing
not the necessarily the legal way, but a lot of white artists were doing it too. This was like whatever. So he said basically like, all right, we're going to do what they do. Like if that's how.
Yeah, that's it. That's how they're going to play. That's how we're going to play it. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really necessarily his fault. Like he didn't invent payola.
Right.
It had already been around for like 10 years or more.
So there's like a cute little scene where we see Effie and she like bursts into Curtis's office and she's, you know, it looks like one of her like diva fits. And then it turns out she's saying like, you know, and how come, you know, Martin Luther King gets a B-side on an album. He gets his own album. I can't even get a B-side. And we even know if he can sing. And it like made me laugh because they all like look at her for a second. And I felt like that was really telling of Effie, that for a hot second, they were like, wait, is this a joke?
Yeah,
like it wasn't refers to Martin Luther King. Because what happens is they Rainbow Records, which is the Motown Records like version of Dreamgirls, Rainbow Records puts out a record of his speeches, and right. Effie refers to Martin Luther King as an amateur performer. She's like, "Why are you promoting an amateur performer over a real performer?"
He was like, "Blink." Blink.
Yeah, but then like she's joking, and she's like, you know, she says to Curtis's sisters, like, he's a great man, like your brother's a great man. And then she sings Love You I Do, which is an excellent song. It's another one that was great written for the movie.
But
in that montage, this is where we really see that Curtis and Dina are like into each other.
I do. I say that's very ironic considering it's Effie singing about her love for Curtis.
Yeah. This is where we see for sure she has like fallen in love with Curtis and Curtis is into Dina.
Yeah.
Well, I think a little bit leading up to that, we were seeing Curtis getting tired of Effie.
Effie's exhausting.
Yeah, she is. I bet she is.
Yeah, I think
probably always her way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when she bars into the office, she was like,
he wasn't surprised. Like it wasn't unusual.
It was totally like, here we go again.
Here we go again. Right.
You know what probably happened? They probably just had a fight. This was when
I said in my notes, I said, you know, Effie and Curtis are together, but he's obviously into Dina. And is he just staying with Effie because he knows he needs to keep her happy?
Go ahead.
At this point, they're still just the backup singers for Jimmy.
Right.
Even though she is the best singer.
Yeah, I think that she knows the whole thing is good, but I think he's banking on them.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's still planning on them being like the thing that's going to really help him.
And it's true because obviously she thinks that she may have a solo career because that's why Cece is writing her songs and she's performing something like Love You I Do.
He was promised that he would be able to write her a hit. And he promised her he would write her a hit.
And that she would also she thought she was going to open for Jimmy like one day, mm-hmm. like right. be able to sing a song in the show.
But in the background was this the runway? Was this the way over for them?
So we get like a little scene where we see Laurel and Jimmy together and we see that like they're sleeping together now. So Laurel tells us like she's a woman now. And Tina's like, I know. I think Dana's character is like cute. The way she's like the good girl. She's like, I can't believe you're doing that. And Effie says, like, you know, she loves Jimmy just like I love Curtis. And when two people are in love, it's okay. And Dina says something about, like, well, that's not how my mama raised me. Right. Like, and then Cece pops in the door and he goes, are you ladies decent? And Dina goes, well, I am. I can't speak for these two.
And she does have cute lines like that. She does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she delivers them well. Like, I feel like Beyonce's like an okay actress. Like, she sells like all those little throwaways. They're cute. No,
I agree. This was a good character for her. She said this was the first movie she felt like she was actually an actress because she had acted a few times before this.
Mm. Well, good for her. So then Curtis said comes in and says that he's just breaking
bless
them up
her
with
heart.
Jimmy.
That was the Southern version of bless her heart.
So, Curtis says that he's breaking them up with Jimmy and Laurel has a fit. She's like, you don't want me and Jimmy together. Nobody wants me to be together. Blah, 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 blah. And he's like,
it has nothing to do with you two.
And he says that they're going to be, Jimmy's going back on the road. They're going to be the Dreams now. And they're opening up, like, you know, they're going to have their own act. And Laurel goes, well, I love me some Jimmy, but I don't want to be singing behind him my whole life. She's like, she's over it. She's good.
We skipped the whole part about how Jimmy was at this like white bread club that Curtis gets them into
in Florida. That's when he broke up with Danny Glover.
Yeah, he breaks up with Marty because
I must have been involved in my cooking at this point.
Okay, so all right, that happens in the dressing room after this scene. So Marty is upset with Curtis because Curtis has canceled all these dates he's booked for Jimmy, and Curtis has bigger dreams for Jimmy. He wants Jimmy to be accepted by white audiences, basically. Like, his ultimate goal is to, like, get him on American Bandstand. That's how white he wants Jimmy to be. Mm-hmm. To me, though, I was like, he booked Jimmy at this, like, the whitest white club ever. Don't you agree, Matt?
That's what it was, and that's what they said. He was like, no one performs. When they said it was the Joint in Florida, and I forget if they said the club or if he was just like, Florida.
Like, yeah,
get him in down there. Yeah, yeah.
And it was like only white people were there, and he doesn't even sing his music, like the music we've seen Jimmy sing throughout this whole movie, which is like very James Brown, soulful.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, and it was a very like, looked like a crooning set. You could have got Nat King Cole in there, but even when
yeah,
he started doing some of his like, yeah.
Well, that's so what happened.
Left
Jessica, he starts like, yeah, getting a little more soulful, and he starts singing to a white woman, and she starts getting uncomfortable, being like, oh, like a black man singing to me and being sexual. Oh no, yeah. We must leave. And she whispers to her husband, and they like scoot her out of there. And Curtis is there with a producer from American Bandstand, which is his ultimate dream. And so he sees this happen.
Okay.
And he's like, not ready.
So for Bandstand, we'll get him in some more grown-up outfits. Don't worry. Don't you worry.
Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, well, we could change it around for Bandstand. We can do whatever you want for Bandstand. Like,
yeah. Yep.
Such a sellout. Such a sellout.
Yeah. The whole time. Yeah. Okay.
What'd you think of that, Matt? What'd you think of that whole scene?
50-50. If they didn't take that risk, you know what I mean? If there weren't artists taking that risk and performing their way, regardless of whom for, you know what I mean?
Oh, Jimmy took the risk with like changing up how he was singing, you said?
Jimmy took the risk. And I think he's like that had to happen. It wasn't accepted, but it was at a time where it just wouldn't be accepted. So he had to, I think he cut loose.
Well, like, he had the wrong audience. He had the wrong, if he had a completely different audience that were his fans, they would have been screaming their heads off.
They would have been in for it. So like, do you perform? I mean, you perform for the audience, but it's like, look, this is who we are. This is the act you've booked. Yeah. We're going to go do our thing.
To me, I was like, he still could have put him in a more white club or venue without it being like sit down dinner nightclub. That's kind of where they put Jimmy. This place that like nobody would be at. He needs to be at somewhere where kids are dancing.
Right.
Where kids, yeah, at least the people were younger. He was with all these middle-aged people that just don't get him. Like, yeah. I felt like there was a different, like there's, you know, white people like would have liked.
So it was a generation gap, not just a racial gap.
Yeah.
For them. Like it wouldn't have worked anyway.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, it just wasn't there.
Like, probably people who weren't into Elvis. Like, they wouldn't have been into that kind of thing.
Even yeah, they would have been like, the Beatles have long hair.
Right.
Like, it was that crowd. Like, so that's why I was like, why did he book him at that type of place? So I was like, he should have booked him at a place where he could still have been him and been accepted.
See, the couple up front was older, but I thought there was some, like,
well, it was a sit-down place, too, where they're all at, like, tables, you know? It wasn't, like, a concert venue. It was, like, a nightclub.
Yeah. It wasn't for the kids.
Yeah, it was, like, the old school where your parents would go on a night out to watch, like, someone, like, Engelbert Humperdinck. Or, like, saying Nat King Cole. It'd be where that's what perfect would have been Nat King Cole.
Older, more time. Yeah, you're right. That was like him like trying too hard. That was Marty.
That was Curtis trying too hard. Yeah. That was Curtis's mistake.
Wasn't at the time when basically he kicked Marty to the curb, right? It was around that scene or before, right before that.
Right before that. Cause so that's what it was. Cause Marty, he's like, I worked so hard to get all of these bookings. He's like, no, those aren't good enough. Like he needs to play these types of places.
He was like, no, he's mine. He was like, Jimmy, he don't belong to nobody, baby.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What does he say? I wrote down what he said. Hold on. He was like, if you want him, brother, you got him. And he's like, I love you, Jimmy, but you can't have it all. Cause Jimmy was like telling him, he's like, no, he was like, you don't have to leave. He's like, I love you, but you can't have everything. And yeah. Marty basically discovered Jimmy.
Yep. That was a good scene. Like, you know what's crazy is like, I feel like Danny Glover's a good actor.
Yeah, he was. He was great. I was so excited to see him. I totally forgot he was in this movie.
Right. He has such a natural way about him. You just whatever setting he's in, you're like, that's that guy who does.
Yeah,
that.
Of course he's there. Yeah.
Yeah, he was perfect. He was great.
Yep. Yeah, I always like when Danny Glover pops up in a thing.
Oh, I was so happy to see him. I was like, hey!
He did so well. Every part always plays it so well.
And so there's that whole scene where they tell them they're going to get their own act.
Yeah, that's
and
afterwards.
And then one of my favorite scenes in the movie, so then it like takes a turn real bad. It takes a turn real fast. They tell them that Dina is going to be singing lead now.
Yes.
Right.
Siobhan, do you remember how much we used to laugh about this like pair of
Thank
scenes,
you.
This, like, the lines? This killed us when because Jennifer Hudson goes, about how she can't sing, like, lead. Curtis, she can't sing like I can. And Beyonce has to say, she's right, Curtis, I can't, to Jennifer Hudson. And I just love the idea.
Our joke used to be, she's ruh, 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 ruh. I can't do it, guys. I can't say it. All right,
listen.
I can't do it. I just can't say it. Someone dub me. Someone has a thought
about how it must have felt for Beyonce to have to say that Jennifer Hudson is a better singer than her.
Yes.
But they say that, like, you know, it's TV. Kids watch TV now. And he basically says, like, it's got to be Dina because she's hotter in so many words.
Well, that's why. Well, she asks, she's like, oh, so Dina's singing lead because you like the way she looks?
Okay. And here's the moment.
To you, Curtis?
Here's one of the biggest moments. This is a woman who has had her world ripped out from underneath her. Everything that she has worked for is falling apart around her. And I don't really feel anything about it because Jennifer Hudson is not selling it to me at all.
Well, because she's not grateful for, like, any good stuff that's happened to her.
But
maybe.
I don't even see any kind of, like, despair.
Thanks, Curtis.
I don't see any heightened emotion from Jennifer Hudson in a scene where she could really make me feel something.
I understand what you're saying.
You're right, Jess.
Ugh. Thank you.
That's how I felt watching it. Was like the first half of the movie, they don't do a good enough job of making her be sympathetic to you.
But she also doesn't do a good enough job of acting it. If she were a better actor, we might feel more sympathetic.
There wasn't enough contrast between the dreaming Effie, who had been singing her whole life and only knows how to sing and is getting a big break, between the Effie who was beginning to enjoy the fruits of her labor, to the Effie who is having it ripped out from.
There's no nuance to the performance at all.
That is now has a kid and she went, yeah, you're right. When, like, even when she said, you know, when the welfare or the unemployment guy was like, you know, have you reached out to the girl's father? She was like, you know, Magic has no father. Like, that should have been way heavier. It was really heavy. It was good writing, but maybe not good delivery.
It was the best she could do.
Yeah, which was.
But when she sings that song, I Am Changing, well, when she sings, she's so great at emoting.
That's exactly what I wrote in my notes. When she starts to sing, then you're there with her, but that's not good enough.
Yeah.
That's not a triple threat.
Well, the catch is she nailed her one note. She nailed strong, sassy, no matter what.
But it takes more than that.
It was so much.
Like, bullheaded. Like, she was a very bullheaded Effie. Which, I guess Effie's bullheaded in general. I don't know enough about that.
But she's not a sympathetic character when we're not seeing any layers. There's no nuance.
That might even be why you don't see so much. I mean, I don't know how to have to say
it. I think it would have been better if we saw more of her and Curtis by themselves as a couple.
I don't think anything they added to the movie would have made a difference because I don't think she's a strong enough actress.
The catch was with the Effie in the beginning worked because it was she was confident, she was in charge, she was like, well, I'm.
Yeah, but in this moment, I want to see her break.
I thought all that, was working, but then we didn't see her. She didn't then begin to fall, like, you never saw her enjoy it. It was just always still that same, where's our dressing room?
She was always fighting for something better.
It was like, hey, where's our dressing room? And then when she was trying to go for the comeback, it was like, hey, where's our dressing room?
Even in this scene, when she says, and this is where I said, like, are we supposed to be rooting for her? Like, they're trying to explain to her why this is the best for everyone. And I get it's crappy for her. It sucks. What they're doing is shitty. But even as she's standing there and the only thing she's saying is, what about me? There's no note to that makes me feel sympathy for it. There's nothing about it that makes me go, yeah, what about her? I'm just going, like, for fuck's sake, Effie, it's not all about you.
Yeah.
No, I feel a little bit bad for her.
Now, what about, she said it like, what about me performing here right now? Not what about me going through
what
all
about my life?
Stuff? You're right.
Me as a human?
She said, what about what I feel? What about what I need? She sings
that. Yeah, well, because someone wrote that, but she doesn't say it in a way that makes me feel any way about it.
if she didn't emote that, that's, you know, that's different. But she does say it, like, you know, she does say, like, what about what I want? What about
But she says it in that, with that one note, that one bullheaded,
where's my dressing room?
Diva note, where I don't feel any different. She has a little more
vulnerability when she says
that. Right, she might as well be saying, where's my dressing room?
When yeah,
she says,
yeah.
What about what I feel?
Even when she said, even when she put her hands on Oogie Boogie at the end, when she's like, oh, girl, honey, I'll tell you about my time. I crawled into a bottle for 10 years. She still said it like, well, where's my dressing room? I didn't believe that she had spent any time as an alcoholic. You're right. Yeah, there wasn't enough. She didn't contrast it. She didn't, there wasn't enough.
There were no levels.
There were no levels to it. There were no levels to it. And so, like,
I agree with that. I would agree there was no levels, that she was kind of like the, but I thought she did, but as Matt said, she did really great at what she was doing.
But it's not enough.
The style fit her so well. The musical theater taking place in like the 50s, 60s through the 70s.
All right.
And
this is what I found myself thinking. Retta would have killed it. Retta would have made us feel something.
Jessica, without looking up who was nominated, who should have won that year?
I don't know who was nominated.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't know that about any year. Like, I don't know stuff like that off the top of my head.
But if you really felt like someone was like,
literally doesn't matter, because that's not Academy Award winning acting. It's not even good acting.
I would ask you to even look up who was nominated and see if you remember any of their
performances from that
performances.
Thing. I don't.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. She shouldn't even have been. I don't feel that she even should have been nominated.
Oh,
she's not a good actor.
Nominated.
She's not a good actor. She's a great singer. She's not a good actor.
It still has to do with talent and emoting when she's singing, and she's emoting when
she could
singing.
Win a Grammy,
but she's emoting when she's singing.
But that's not enough.
Apparently it was, though.
But it was for
Anne Hathaway.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing with Effie, and I was.
That's a difficult comparison to make, because Anne Hathaway won an Oscar for what is essentially an opera. She didn't really have any spoken lines.
And even
still, but you just said it's not enough to emote while singing.
Even still, well,
it's not for an Academy Award. Okay, here's where it's not enough. It's not enough to emote while singing when you also have a movie full of spoken lines where you fall so far below the bar for an Academy Award.
Well,
if Dreamgirls was an opera, it'd be okay.
Maybe. It wouldn't, I wouldn't know the difference if Dreamgirls was an opera.
But I
have something to compare it to, and it was bad.
If it was an opera, she would still have the same job. She would still have to arc that character. What she does, I think that's what's missing. Mm-hmm. And that's why the payoffs don't seem as heavy.
And I feel like no one bothered to work with her. It's not even 100% her fault. I feel like because she sings so well, no one bothered to work with her on her acting.
I think it was one of those, like, look, this is going to get us the Oscar. This is what's going to do.
Bill Condon, he actually did 2 weeks, just him and her. He did 2 weeks where they just worked.
It wasn't long enough.
I don't know if it was, along with all the other rehearsals.
He wanted to do just
personal rehearsals with just the two of them. And I don't know if they worked on her singing at all. Like, I can't tell you that. But that's when you hear the stories that the director asked her to be a diva and to show up late and to be, like, moody.
Yeah, I read that, and I thought that was stupid, too.
Well, that was only during those 2 weeks when it was just the two of them. He wasn't asking her to do that with other people that were getting paid to, like, you know, like, made me happy. I was like, good. I was like, right. Like, there's, like, really, you think Beyonce is going to put up with that? Like, I doubt it. Right. Like, yeah. So it was just two weeks.
There's still fighting people. There's still venue rentals.
Yeah. It was just two weeks between the two of them that he had her do that, where she should basically deal.
Oh, you know who I would have rather seen get the Oscar, looking at who she was nominated with?
Kate Blanchett.
Lil Abigail Breslin for Little Miss Sunshine.
Aww, yeah.
She was excellent in that movie.
She was cute in that movie. Jessica, do you remember this was the year that we went to
We saw all the movies. Yeah, I remember. Maybe that's why I saw it twice.
We, Matchell, Jessica and I, at the movie theater, they did a one-day marathon of all of the nominated movies. And this is when it was just five.
Oh.
So well, it was only five movies, and at that point they were smart, and they Little Miss Sunshine was already out on like DVD and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they made that the last movie. So Jessica and I sat through four movies in a row.
Oh wow.
I believe
you got like a dinner break, and you know how normally you can't bring food into the movie theater? You were allowed to bring in like your takeout from like restaurants.
Oh yeah, because it was like one set price, obviously, because it was all day. So you got unlimited popcorn. And like soda.
And like soda, yeah. And you got to sit there all day and see all the Best Picture nominees. It was really fun.
So we saw The Departed, which was great. Queen, Crash. Which was great.
I forgot Crash. About-
I guess Babel would have... No, no. Babel was nominated for Best Picture. No, Crash was a different year.
Was Crash a different year? Okay, yeah, wait. I'll tell you exactly what the category, what the nominees were.
I remember it was The Departed, The Queen... Something else in the Sands at Iwo Jima, which was like the one.
Right. Letters to Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine.
That was the fourth one, Matt. We had to watch
Babel and The Departed.
Oh, say that again, Jess.
It was The Departed, Babel, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen.
Oh, so we did watch Babel. I did not remember when I looked at the two actresses that were nominated, I couldn't remember their performances. And I'm usually good at that.
And it just annoys me when we take something from theater and don't put theater actors in it. And there are so many incredible theater actors who can do it all and could have done it so much better. And it just
that is very fair.
Makes me sad.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my, this is a different situation, but that was my argument about Cats, the movie, being like CGI stuff.
I still haven't seen that.
There's so many amazing costume designers and makeup artists.
Yes.
That could have done.
They could have done it way better. They could have done something really beautiful.
That you just cheated out of a job.
I won't go near it just yet. I want to see
it. I haven't seen it. No.
That show is less of a show than Mary Poppins. They're not Mary Poppins. Than Dolly. Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Dolly.
Yeah. Like, and with all due respect, like I'm not trying to like shit on any of them.
You, as long as you don't shit on The Matchmaker. I was Dolly Levi in The Matchmaker. You can't shit on that. But you can shit on Hello Dolly.
He walks into town.
Do you remember when we watched the musical Hello Dolly? We watched the movie and we were not into it. We watched it with Dan.
We said something really funny. And
there was because we were high. And we were like, oh, the orchestrations.
We were joking.
We joked about that forever.
We were probably joking about, like, we're such dorks. People get high and do
other
things. And we get high and watch,
high and watch movie musicals. Yeah.
The orchestrations are blowing my mind.
That was our big joke about that movie. Yes.
Plot was amazing.
A fun fact about me, I did play Dolly Levi once.
I Hello Dolly when it's done, but she comes into town, ruins all these people's lives, and then fixes all. Like if she didn't do anything, the movie.
I get the rich man.
Funny hot take on Hello Dolly.
Get a rich guy at the end. That's all that matters.
If she didn't come to town, everybody would have been okay.
That's so funny. We have to tell Kevin Esmond that next time we see him.
You can say that about a lot of you. Like, you can say the same thing about The Music Man. If Harold Hill never showed up,
good point.
Fine.
We just didn't show up. Like things kind of would have been. There would have had
nothing would have changed.
Right. You can say that about Alexander Hamilton, but I feel like things would be a lot different. Like things would be a lot different if he didn't show up.
In the town.
Have you guys watched The Prom yet on Netflix?
No, but I want to.
That was, it like bummed me out because I read like a thing where Ryan Murphy like said that he made a conscious choice not to cast anyone from the Broadway show. And that was just on Broadway a couple of years ago. And so many theater actors are out of work right now. Like it was just, I don't know, it was crappy.
Technically he works with theater actors too because he works with Lea Michele, Ben Platt.
Ben Platt's The Politician, yeah.
But he was in, what's that show he was in?
Oh, Dear Evan Hansen. Yeah, he's a Broadway person.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, so that's kind of interesting considering he works with a lot of people who work on Broadway.
Yeah, he apparently was like, I just wanted to like do like my own take on it. But these people who like just originated these roles, like
he wanted to work with Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman. It's okay.
I mean, I really enjoyed the movie, but I did feel for those
and James Corden.
Yeah, people hate him in that movie. So then they do that song "We Are a Family," which I feel like the song. This is why people don't like musicals. Like, I just feel like this song is like a little ridiculous. It's got
this
like,
song's been in my head all day. Fun fact, it's literally been in my
and they bring it back day. So many times. Which and it's one? Like, okay, what was the lyric? I was like, you're not going anywhere, staying and taking your share. Like, it's just a lot of like lazy rhymes. Like, I feel like we could have done this with just like a few good lines of dialogue and like gone on with our day.
I wanted to ask you guys, do you feel like from a performer standpoint, how do you feel about Effie's situation where she is the lead, the best, and being told it to sucks. Take it back?
It yeah. sucks.
Yeah.
But you're going to be famous. You're going to get your own band.
If there
knowing
was
everybody, your brother, your just yeah. your brother.
Knowing me, I would probably do it, but I would feel some kind of way about it always. It would never be okay.
It would be tough. It would be tough to keep that shadow from eating you.
Mm-hmm.
That would it would to keep that would be a thing in the back of your head. It's like
always. You both can sing and you're both performers, so that's why I was very curious. There's a few instances where I'm very curious as your performer selves what you're
well that's like kind of what I'm saying. What they do to her sucks, but I don't feel anything about it.
Couldn't feel sorry enough for her because there wasn't the change.
Because,
yeah. To me, I don't feel sorry for her because I'm like, you gotta do what's right for everybody. You
gotta take it for the team.
Right.
The way they go about it is really shitty too, where no one takes her aside privately. Like no one, like they just, it's all out there in front of everyone.
It was immediate. It was very immediate.
Yeah,
was,
but Curtis is very rough. You see, he doesn't
Curtis
have a gentle
about
hand.
It sucks. Like,
yeah,
it's
Curtis
just,
doesn't
yeah.
have a gentle hand with that sort of thing. Some managers.
Yeah, it's
have
a crappy
that.
Thing, and then also the way they go about it sucks.
The way that should have been played on Jennifer Hudson's point from her portrayal should have been you didn't get a sense that she was trying to support. You didn't see. And that's part of that. That's part of what was missing out of her performance.
Like, remember Pam telling us that when someone is about to cry, the thing they do is try not to cry. And I always think about that when I have to cry, like when I'm acting. There was like none of that. I didn't see any of that like fight within her.
Hold back. There was no hold back of. And also, like, it was still all that. Well, where's my dressing room?
Mm-hmm.
If this gets us our dressing room, then fine. And then you're proud of her. For swallowing that nut, but she didn't really do that. So like this attitude, I'll get my dressing room. You know, so you didn't feel bad for her. You're like, she was getting yeah. of the stick, but you're like, look, just go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Been more like, wow.
Like I said, it would be a hard pill to swallow knowing mm-hmm. that you're the best and you really should have that role.
If it's a hard pill to swallow, we need to see the difficulty in her swallowing it, not mm-hmm. how she is swallowing it. And everything was
the all you see is the chip on her shoulder. There's nothing else.
Yep. Not the vulnerability behind mm-hmm. it. Not the pain.
Right.
The evidence of being done wrong was there, but you didn't see her done wrong. You didn't see her like, you know what?
Yeah, you kind of want to say, come on, buck up. Like right. pick one for the team, like they're mm-hmm. telling her to.
You don't want to say that to your protagonist. You don't want to say buck up. You want to say, you know what, good for you for making that choice.
Mm-hmm. Where, but you don't see her make the choice.
You don't see her make the choice.
Well, they make the choice mm-hmm. for her. Yeah, they make the choice for
her. But you don't see her decide that she's going to swallow the pill.
Right.
Oh.
You don't see her try. Right, exactly. You don't see her try to swallow the pill. And then when she's up there performing, and really that's where the pill comes back up. She spits it out and just walks off. But it was still all the same, where's my dressing room attitude? So mm-hmm. Didn't see her get the pill down and put the dress on and really try to give it her all. And then maybe we see, you know.
Yeah, because that's what you see, like, they turn into the dreams and they have their song Dream Girls. Mm-hmm. And the ladies are full on Diana Ross and the Supremes now. They have the same style, glamour. Beyonce looks perfect.
Curtis is not even trying to, like, you know, a reporter asks him about putting the group together and he does this like metaphor with an ice cream sundae. And the reporter says, is Dina the cherry? And he says something like, you know, Gina's the cherry, the chocolate sauce, and the whipped cream. Like,
and you do see Effie, like, but I would also kind of feel the same. I mean, as just a girl being like, that's the guy I'm sleeping with, I'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah, it sucks.
What about Curtis, that girl?
That's what I'm getting at. Curtis sucks.
Now that you mention it, if she didn't come across as such a bitch, Curtis was saying all that stuff, you'd be like, man, that's messed up. Why is he talking to her about her mm-hmm. and her like that? But the way Effie was acting, you're kind of like, oh, good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, she deserves it.
Eat it.
She needs to be taken down.
Eventually, we'll see.
Yes.
everybody will sing out their frustrations to Effie. They kind of sing this all out to her eventually. Not to jump ahead, but
Beyonce's payoff was there, and so was Anika Rose. What's her name?
Anika Nani Rose.
Anika, her payoff was there because it was like, look, you know, I've been the good girl long damn enough. I mean, just blame it on the world. Yep.
So things are like not great, and then we know this because they start recording a song called Heavy. And they're doing this like to the backdrop of the Detroit riots. Effie kind of has this like tantrum in the studio, and she says, "You're sleeping with her and everyone knows it." Do you think they were already sleeping together? Definitely. I don't like to think that Dina would do that.
The only thing is that no one really denies that happening too hard. That's the only reason I think I agree with you.
I mean, if he's sleeping with Dina, he's sleeping with both of them because we're about to find out Effie's pregnant.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's definitely two-timing. I don't know. I think at that time, maybe they were doing just enough to where everybody was like, oh yeah, you know what, they got a thing. But maybe they just weren't at that time yet.
Just like to think, even if they had this like flirtation, I just like to think that Dina wouldn't cross that line until Effie was like out of the picture.
Exactly. I think they may have been pushing the line. They were probably not inappropriate, but you know, pushing the line. They're probably pushing it on other people. And other people were like, look at Curtis. But I agree. I don't think they were doing a thing yet. I think that was Effie throwing a fit. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, it's a shame that I'm gonna rewatch it after this. The whole time I kept trying to be on Effie's side. But now that I think about it, she didn't deserve that throughout. She didn't earn it. Mm-mm. Just being on her side. You just rooted for her because you're like, man, she's definitely getting it.
Because you know you're supposed to.
You know, right. You know she was being done wrong. So from a right and wrong standpoint.
And she's the most talented. If you're the best, you should win the best.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was still, she was such a diva the whole time. You're like, well, instead of rooting for her, you felt like she needed to get taken down a peg.
That's why I feel like if you think of this movie as two acts, it's a hard. They treat her differently in the second act, like you should have been rooting for her all the time, but it's like, well, she kind of did.
Well, yeah. I mean, it literally is two acts. It's a stage musical, and the act break is coming up.
Yeah, and that's what I mean.
And
like,
they try to present her differently, but we just don't care.
She did it to herself. That's what you kind of come across, you take from the first act of the play, from this, the first act of the movie. The play's different.
Yeah, what they did is wrong, but she's so abrasive that you are not even mad at them.
Right. You almost, it had a good riddance vibe to it. It's like, good, go shine.
He like runs out of the studio and I guess didn't realize like how severe the rioting was. And there's fires in the middle of the street. She kind of like panics and has this moment and Curtis comes out with her and she tells him she's not feeling well, which, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw like what was going on in Detroit at the time? Cause this is the 60s. This is like right in the middle of the civil rights movement.
It was, it's a reminder, good reminder of what, of like, what was going on in this movie's background. I don't want to say like, you know, that civil rights and race wars were in the background of America. I was definitely like the foreground. It was definitely what was happening. But in the background of this movie, what the tone that it's set to, I think it was just as, I'm glad it was abrupt as it was. Mm-hmm. That Effie walked out of the studio and was all just like.
Mm-hmm. That was my question to you.
I liked how abrupt it was.
Oh, that was my question, because they address Martin Luther King and they address it in this moment. But my question to you was going to be like, did you feel like they didn't address it enough, or they did a good job of setting the time period and setting what was happening?
I think they set the time period. The play didn't want to, like, it didn't want to go there. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about that. So like the parts that it gave us, I think it was like, it wasn't like Forrest Gump, where it just happened to be going on in the background. They went there. And they showed us some of the ugly.
Remember also, this was written, it's largely based on a musical that was written in the 80s. It would be different today. I feel like it would be addressed differently today.
All we saw was, we didn't see the whole formula, we just saw what it, so you just see a lot of the chaos and the aftermath, but if we saw I think nowadays we would be more prone to, or a movie maker might want to, would foreshadow what the whole event was in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, why were the people so upset and rioting, as opposed to the people were rioting.
Right, and we're just expected to know why.
Exactly. It's almost, when you don't see the lead up in like that, it still comes across as, well, these Black people were just rioting. You know, I like
people, yeah.
If you see, like, why were people so pissed off? why, where did the protests go wrong? And like that, but that's why it gets tough to show that kind of thing in any movie, because you gotta, if you don't present the right pieces to it, you're going to be presenting it from a side. Mm-hmm. If you don't show like everything in just an equal part. So I like that it was this abrupt, like, huh. She walked outside to this chaos, and where they were almost like sheltered in it, they were sheltered by the art. And it was the music that was kind of keeping them safe and protected in there. You know, and she walked out on the art, and then here's all the ugly and the chaos. And when they were in the art, things were beautiful.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There was communication happening in the art. It may have been a little rough at times and people walking out, but in the art, that's where the world was controlled and it was safe. And then everything else was the chaos and the abstract and the nuts stuff.
That's very, that's interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
The art was protected.
The art was safe.
Yeah.
Even though there was drama within the art.
Mm-hmm. And it has like almost this other layer of metaphor when Effie like walks out on it all and she's kind of like pulled up short by this like chaos. That now, what's going on with Effie for right now is not great, but if she walks out,
you're in the world,
it's gonna be a lot worse.
Yeah, the real world.
Yeah. You want to be out there or you want to be in here with us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the next thing we see, they're performing on TV and she just like walks off set. And like we were saying earlier, like, you know, you could swallow the pill, but not forever. Like it would always be there. And she finally, like she says, you stole my dream, Dina, and you stole my man.
And Curtis is telling her basically to get in line.
Yeah, Curtis at no point does what you would think like a boyfriend would do. He's never like, I love you, you don't have to worry. Like he never tries to reassure her.
But he even sees Dina, the other woman he loves, as a brand, a product.
A product,
yeah. Right.
Well, and you see Curtis that when they're married, to jump ahead, you see he doesn't, does he love Dina? Does he know Dina? You know what I mean? Or does
he's
love
Dina image? Like up on a pedestal, right? But
does he love her image? What he created, what he's putting out there? Is that what he loves? Because she obviously has different ideas than he does about where her career should go and what she thinks is good ideas for movies, music, whatnot. They're on completely two different wavelengths.
Right. That he loved his creation.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He created Dina Jones.
Yep.
Dina, the girl we met in Detroit, is someone different.
Yep.
Jess, did you ever watch Boston Public? Do you remember that show?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was very into that show. I once had a complete emotional collapse during an episode of that show. There was a character named Zach who, like, the whole time he was on the show, we talked about how much he looked like my brother. And then he died. And he had reminded me so much of my brother on the show that when they killed this kid on the show, I lost my mind. Like I can see myself sitting in my parents' den sobbing.
Matt, did you watch Boston Public?
I've seen, I watched a couple episodes of that.
Cause Loretta Devine was in it.
Mm-hmm. And so I was excited to see her later.
So was Effie's replacement, Sharon Neal.
Oh, in the show. I mean,
in the movie, Effie's replacement in the movie, her real name is Sharon Neal, and she was on Boston, I believe she was on Boston Public. She's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman.
There was an episode of Boston Public. It was my first year at Stockton. I walked into the level mate, the flat mate. This dude, Carmen Campese, he had one of the first flat screen TVs. And this thing was.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's like 15 years ago.
It was a piece of furniture, but the picture was amazing. I remember there was this woman who was probably the most unique looking woman I had ever seen in my life. And I was just, I mean, you could see the hearts in my eyes. I was in love. And I never saw her ever again. So I stopped watching the show.
I wonder who it was.
I watched to try to see who that was and try to figure out.
Was she white or black?
I don't know. She's
mm-hmm. You don't know.
She was ethnically ambiguous.
Okay, so she wasn't white.
She had a defining look one way or the other. I remember her just being extremely...
She a student or a teacher?
I don't remember. I don't know if she was a student, a teacher.
You should do a rewatch and you should crack this mystery.
I'd have to watch like every episode. I gotta start at the beginning.
It was a good show.
It was. It was. I remember like it being
at least definitely the first.
Yeah, my mom and I used to always watch it. Okay, so it's New Year's Eve. They're rehearsing for their big New Year's Eve show.
I got a question.
Uh-huh.
Is Dreamgirls a New Year's Eve movie? Because the climax happens on New Year's Eve.
It is.
Now it just, it doesn't just take place on your, like, part of the movie doesn't take place on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, no, the climax. Emotional height takes place on New Year's Eve.
Is it a New Year's Eve movie?
Turning point, it's a New Year's Eve movie.
And is that the title of this episode? So it's New Year's Eve. Effie has not shown up for rehearsal. And they're all like, you know, where's Effie? But then we see that Effie is at the doctor.
Right.
But she hasn't shown up for rehearsal in a couple days.
Yeah, no, she's, a, you know, and why would they expect anything else? She's a pain in the ass.
And this is before cell phones, so she's not texting someone. I was thinking, I'm like, if cell phones just existed, this could have been, like, so easily.
Could have a lot of problems. This is where we see for the first time that they're being billed as Dina Jones and the Dreams.
Yeah. Right. Now, to get into where there are similarities between the Supremes and the Dreams, the Supremes became Diana Ross and the Supremes in 1967 while in Las Vegas. The Dreams became Dina Jones and the Dreams in 1967 while in Las Vegas. Cindy Birdsong went on to perform with the Supremes the same night Florence Ballard was fired, just as Michelle Morris goes on to perform with the Dreams the same night Effie White is fired.
Dig it.
Great. And so that's what happens. She finally shows up. They're all acting like real cagey.
They're very awkward.
The two Dreams are performing for the rehearsal. The club owner comes in. He's like, listen, man, it's New Year's Eve. You promised me three girls. Mm-hmm. Jamie Foxx's character says, look, what did he say? He says, trust me.
Mm-hmm. I thought Dina Jones is supposed to be the cherry on top and the sundae and everything else. Why does he even care about the three girls? He's got Dina. She's there.
Three women. I want three women performing.
Yeah.
So they're all acting real weird. And then this new girl walks
And Effie
out.
Does say she's been to the doctor and she feels a lot better now.
Mm-hmm.
She knows so they replaced her. This new woman walks out. And here's another like moment that like it's just such a missed opportunity. They say to her, Curtis was supposed to, and she goes, Curtis was supposed to love me. Someone could have sold that line. Someone could have broken our hearts with that.
And that's what Jennifer Holliday did.
She does it on the Tony performance. You should watch.
Yeah, I watched it today. I watched it right before this. Yeah.
It said, Curtis was supposed to love me. Bennett.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Love me. Curtis was supposed to love me.
Yep.
So this song's called It's All Over. And there's so much drama. There's so much drama in this song. Everybody's getting out all their feelings about Effie.
Yeah, it's all coming out. Curtis tells her, you've been late, you've been mean, and getting fatter all the time.
Now you lie, I've never been so thin.
Yeah, girl, all right. But also, like, we know she's pregnant, and Curtis sucks, but like, Also, I feel like no matter how much of an asshole someone is, you don't have to talk about their weight, Curtis.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, you don't, you're right. But the thing is, like, yeah, you know how when the drain is popped, when the floodgate bursts, when like that thing, you're like, you know what? Let me tell you something about yourself. Talk about someone's breath. Like everything will come up.
It's true. You're very right.
Word vomit, as it were.
Yeah, word vomit, exactly, yeah. But Curtis is just one big word vomit. Like, he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. So they're all ganging up on her. They offer to buy her out.
Yeah. Did you notice that the way they staged this, they had mirrors? So it looked like it was like a ton of people against Effie.
Yeah, it's like that on stage, I think, too.
Oh, is it? Oh, no, I watched the Tonys. The Tonys are a little different.
Yeah. That like feels familiar to me. But yeah, it's good. It's a really good visual. They offer to buy her out. She's like offended, as she should be. And then she sings the big song that even if you've never seen Dreamgirls, you know this song.
When she accuses the new girl of like, how much did you put out to get in?
Yeah. Watch your mouth,
Miss Effie White. Take that rate from no second rate diva who can't sustain. Because that's what's kind of
I also like when she's like, she's a second rate diva. Business.
No one ever likes their credit being taken away from them. You don't like your credit being taken when you know how hard you put in for something and someone's like, oh, that's just because. You're like, wait, whoa. It's not just because or whatever. Yeah, you don't like when your credibility's been snatched from you.
Well, yeah, and I mean that girl, like, she doesn't know Effie. She didn't owe her anything. Like, Effie didn't need to go after her.
And I think
her.
She calls Dina common. And Dina's like, we come from the same place.
Yeah. Like,
Common used to be that was a deep cut.
What is that, like, the equivalent of calling someone today?
Oh man, if you're calling a woman common,
like, basic,
you're calling her sluttish. Sluttish. Yeah.
She took the slow train to Philly as
well. Dad's never watched The Office. He doesn't understand that.
Oh, that's right.
Oh.
Someone took the slow train from Philly.
That means a slut.
Oh, yeah. I would have thought it meant, like, basic too.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes it nastier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a way of.
And Dina's the good girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was the way that, like, a lady would call a woman a whore. But she did it like a lady, so she's very...
Okay. Oh. Comment.
And Laurel also has her line where she's like, and I loved watching the Tony's version, watching Loretta Devine do it. She's such a good Laurel. She's like, I'm just as much as this part of this group as anybody else, again. And I'm tired. Effie, I'm tired.
I'm tired. Effie, we all got pain. Oh.
Yeah. I think we all know that person in their life who thinks everything's happening to them. And it's like, especially right now in a pandemic, you're like, Effie, we all got pain.
We all got pain.
The common denominator is you're the victim or everyone's doing something to you. Maybe
the problem is you.
You got problems too.
Does make common sound a little like on the basic side, no class, uncouth, no intellectual dexterity, as it says. With any of them old sisters or my aunties, they'll tell you that a bitch that's common.
I trust your aunties more than Google.
Do we have a thing we say, like a polite way of calling someone a whore? I can't even think of something that we would say.
Well, I think we're a little more woke, so we wouldn't
we wouldn't do that. Yeah.
We wouldn't do that.
Like saying it, yeah.
I certainly wouldn't do that. I'd be like, good for you if you're a whore.
Tell me some stories.
Give me some tips.
If my friend's husband had an affair, I'd probably call that woman a whore while I was commiserating with her, honestly.
Oh, well, there's a difference between commiserating with your friend and being
If you wanted to say it like in a classier way, would you say it? I don't think we have a word like that. You
guys ever seen Slut Ever? It was on Vice Channel.
Mm-mm.
It's really great. She says, she jokes, she sexually defines a slut, which means she's just open to anything. She's just an open person, and she's just open to trying whatever.
I like the way it was one of the women, forgive me, it was one of the women from the Flavor of Love.
Oh, we love Flavor of Love.
Yeah, you don't need our forgiveness for that.
Yeah, please. Thank you for bringing it up.
I forget what season it was. What a lisp, had a little gap in her tooth, but she was a cute little girl, whatever, or a woman. But she said, well, I forget her nickname and her name and all that, but she said...
Sonia and Mike, if you're listening, let us know. Check out our friend Sonia and Mike on Rewind the Love. They recap all those seasons.
Oh my God. Talk about a guilty pleasure.
You should listen to their podcast. It's really good.
Oh, Matt, they're great. And you know, they are great, and the podcast is great.
Sonia's
great on Twitter. If you're a Twitter person.
We were on an episode about Rock of Love that you can listen to. Sonia was on our episode about Mean Girls.
Bret Michaels and his bandana. But she said, I'm not a this. I'm not a whore. My daddy didn't touch me. She said, I happen to be a perfectly well-adjusted woman that happens to like sex.
There's a lot of us out there.
I thought that was this was the chick that was always like, whenever there was a contest, she would start like slut stripper dancing. All the guys, you know what I mean? And like on Flav's Friends and all that. But she was like, look, I just really like the way she put it. She put it so frankly.
I wonder who that was.
I like the whole slut shaming movement and stuff like that. Being like, don't do that to girls. Like, you know, like don't be a slut shamer.
If the fellas sowing their wild oats, who are they sowing it with? Not all like, you know, closet homosexuals. Sowing it with the women.
As long as it's consensual and safe, that's all that's important.
Having a good time. Yeah. Yeah, it ain't nothing crazy.
Jennifer Hudson sings the song, and I am telling you. And I wrote in my notes, it's good. It's no Jennifer Holliday.
Again, Jennifer mm-hmm. Holliday just does so many different things with her voice mm-hmm. song.
Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
She does it very well.
Yeah, she does. And like the ups are way up. The downs are so like almost whispering. Mm-hmm. She's writing courtesy.
Yeah, Jennifer Holliday will break your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yep. Yep.
Jennifer Hudson will impress you with her exceptional singing, but it's not the same. Themes.
All right, guys, that's it for Act 1 of Dream Girls. Join us next week to hear us break down Act 2.